Sam Sifton has always had his finger on the pulse of how America cooks. Sifton is the food editor of the New York Times and co-founder of New York Times Cooking. In the past few years, and especially during the pandemic, Sifton has become a proponent of what he calls no-recipe recipes, so much so that he's written a book about it, aptly titled The New York Times Cooking No-Recipe Recipes. I spoke with Sam Sifton back in March when the book came out, and I began by asking him where this idea for the no-recipe recipe came from.
Well, it came from a number of different directions all at once and slowly, if that's possible. The fact of the matter is, I spend a lot of time with recipes, right? And I spend a lot of time thinking about how to make bad recipes into good recipes or unhelpful recipes into helpful recipes. But at the same time, I realize I spend a lot of time talking with people about food and telling them how to make something. And when we do that, we don't really talk about specific amounts or oven temperatures. It's a hot oven, a medium oven, a low oven. It's a fistful of mint rather than three tablespoons or what have you. And I thought to myself, you know, I might want to bring a little bit of that into the newsletter that I write for NYT Cooking, What to Cook, as a way of kind of offering a new way of thinking about food so that you don't have to always follow a recipe. You can kind of riff on something as a kind of improvisation rather than following the sheet music really closely. And I did that on Wednesdays for a bunch of years. And then some smart cookie was like, maybe we should put this together in a book.
Take us through one of your no-recipe recipes and tell us how your instructions then differ from what we may be used to seeing.
Well, sure, I can do that. I've got a recipe, a no-recipe recipe here for a kale salad with cranberries, pecans, and blue cheese. You make a mustardy vinaigrette that'll stand up to the greens. That's mustard, it's olive oil, a little lemon juice, salt, and pepper. And you drizzle that over some stemmed and chopped kale. And then you put in some, like, big flavored mix-ins. That could be anything. I use dried cranberries and some pecans. And then I put in some crumbled blue cheese and some croutons because it's sweet, it's salty, it's spicy, it's sour. And then I serve it with some red wine. Why don't we eat salads for dinner more often? That's all you got to do.
So people think you were just telling me that, but you were actually reading that because I was reading along with you, page 66. That was
the
recipe.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the recipe, but it doesn't have to be the recipe. You could put dried currants in there instead of the cranberries. You could use a different kind of nut. You could use a different kind of cheese. You can make the meal however you want to make the meal.
Yeah.
And I think that it's neat to tell people that they can do that now because most of us have been cooking more over the course of the past year than we ever have cooked in our lives. So I think kitchen confidence is up a little, and I hope that a book like No Recipe Recipes can reward that confidence with some ideas for what to do with your skills.
So here's another one, rotisserie chicken panzanella. And here is your recipe. Tear a rotisserie chicken into strips and pieces, then cut a few smallish supermarket tomatoes, or better ones if you've got them, into wedges and marinate them in olive oil, salt, pepper, and red wine vinegar. Pay a few bills or fold some laundry and then turn the whole thing into panzanella by mixing together the chicken tomatoes, some watercress, and several handfuls of croutons. Shower the salad with pepper and add a spray of salt. This, too, is cooking.
Yes, that's a good salad.
That is a good. Well, I got to tell you, I made the roasted cauliflower soup because I had a head of cauliflower and I thought, okay, I'm going to try it out. Sam says I can do this. And sure enough, I did not have artichokes. And so I used hearts of palm. And
oh, cool.
It was pretty good. I have to say it was pretty good.
That's cool. I love it with the hearts of palm. What a neat idea.
So you just said that cooking without a recipe is like musical improvisation, a skill, right? I mean, a lot of people will say, well, it's hard to trust yourself, you know, and you don't want to mess up a good dish. To which you say what, Sam Sifton?
Well, what I say to that is you're probably not going to mess it up. What we're doing here is roasting, we're steaming, we're boiling, we're braising, we're grilling. All those things are like, that's at the base. We know how to do that. And we've been doing it, as I say, for a year now straight.
Mm-hmm.
And then to build flavors, we're just making little triangles of sweet, salty, and fiery, or sour and umami-ish and bitter. And you just kind of play things off one another in ways that are pleasing to you.
So you don't need a recipe, but you do need a pantry, which you say right in the beginning of the book. And you have a list of essentials, things like onions and flour and cornstarch and butter and dried fruits. What ingredients are at the top of that list for you, Sam, as far as pantry items that you really need to keep stocked?
For me, the most important thing is to have a lot of condiments, because condiments help deliver flavor. So that could be as simple as hot sauce. It could be gochujang, the Korean hot pepper sauce. I mean, sauce, paste. It could be a flavored oil, like a sesame oil is a good thing to have. You should always have some anchovies on hand, tomato paste on hand. You should always have soy sauce on hand. You should maybe always have fish sauce on hand, depending on what direction your cooking goes. I find that having a stocked pantry makes it unbelievably easy to riff, because you can, if you think, oh, I need something salty, you can go to those anchovies. If I need something sweet, I can make a decision. Maybe I'll use this molasses. Maybe I'll use maple syrup. Maybe I'll use honey.
And like you say, it seems that pantry cooking is what we've been doing. A lot of us have been doing for the past year. You know, how can I cook this can of beans differently tonight? Right.
Right. I mean, that's right.
So what other shifts in cooking habits have you seen over the past year at New York Times Cooking?
One of the things that I've noticed is that I think I have a suspicion that portion size is coming down for a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people who spent a lot of the pandemic alone or with one or two other people, and they have no use of a giant vat of stew or beans. So they're looking for smaller serving sizes. And I think that may ultimately be a good thing for our readers' health, that we're eating a little less. I certainly don't miss it.
What else is in your mailbox, Sam Sifton? I mean, what other kinds of recipes would you say readers are calling for these days?
Well, there's an overwhelming desire for, and I realize this may contradict what I just said a little bit, but an overwhelming desire for comfort. We're hurting now at the tail end of this thing, even as maybe because there's some hope on the horizon and we're still stuck here. And the recipes that people are asking for don't necessarily reflect that so much as they reflect a desire to feel loved, to feel taken care of, to feel nourished. So those stews, smaller but still stews, those braises, smaller but still braised and delicious, big flavors, sauces, and the like.
A quick shout out to those people who are just flat tired of cooking during the pandemic, Sam. I mean, to those people, you say what? That must happen to you too.
Oh, absolutely. And what I say often is give yourself a break, order a pizza, and try as much as possible to make the act of cooking an intentional one that brings joy into your life as opposed to drudgery into your life.
And so as we're slowly opening up after the pandemic, do you see people still cooking, still going at it in the kitchen?
Oh, I think so. Absolutely. I think that one thing that people have learned a lot about over the course of the past year is food cost. And they see that by cooking at home, they're saving money and they're making the flavors that they want. You can roast an excellent chicken at home in about the time that it takes to go get one elsewhere, and more cheaply too. And I think that'll keep people cooking. And I think people have learned that they like to cook. And I think that'll keep them cooking as well.
New York Times food editor Sam Sifton's new book is The New York Times Cooking No Recipe Recipes. Sam, as always, thank you so much.
Such a pleasure to be here. I'm glad you like the book.